Hey, y'all.
This is Talkin' Trash with Liv
and Lizzie,
the podcast where two friends show each other our silliest and most treasured movies.
Each week, we'll watch a beloved movie,
no matter how corny, childish, or contrived.
Sometimes a masterpiece with minor flaws.
Other times, a magnificent mess.
Because one man's trash
is Liv and Lizzie's treasure. And know me better, man.
You stole exactly what I was going to say for the intro to this, and I think I'm more pleased than disappointed.
Good. So cheers. Good. Cheers to that.
Good job. So how are you?
I'm better now. So sorry, everyone, if you were hoping for a new episode last week. We were intending to do one, so I was contacted by my place of work that I had been directly exposed to COVID, so I ended up quarantining for a bit and went out and got a test and just got it back yesterday, found out I was negative, so
which is good.
That's good, but yeah, so obviously we didn't meet to record.
I hate to say it worked out well timing wise, but it kind of did because I also had car troubles last week.
Yep.
So getting over here would have been a little bit of an issue, but it was not. But I have been looking forward to sitting down and watching a movie, doing this again. So, but I'm glad that you are feeling well.
Thank you.
And I'm glad that you tested negative.
Yeah, I never really felt very bad. I just had, like, a little cold. And I think it was genuinely just a cold. Mm-hmm. But once I found out that I had come into contact with someone so directly, I was like, oh, no. Like, on the off chance that it wasn't just a cold.
Yeah.
I just couldn't risk it. But, you know, I mean, I feel a lot better now. Mainly just because I was worried.
Yeah.
And I was thinking about, like, all the people I had seen, like, at work. You know, because we've been trying to be really good.
Yeah.
Except for work. That's really the only place I see people. That and, like, a grocery store. But, like, you know, I just started thinking, like, oh, no. Like, how many people have I come into contact with? But luckily, I mean, work traced all of that. So it shouldn't really have been a thing. Mm-hmm. But, you know, it was just stressful. So.
Well, as a friend, I appreciate when my friends get tested and, and figure that out. So.
Yeah, be safe, guys. Make good choices.
Yep.
All that jazz.
It's like pre-spring break. Make good choices, guys. Be smart.
You know, I don't think I ever had, like, a really wild spring break.
I never did. Like, I never had a really wild anything, let's be real.
My wildest spring breaks were, like, going to Disney with my roommate and then just, like, eating our way around the parks.
That's a beautiful spring
about
break.
About as wild as we got. It was really fun. But yeah, we never really did the, like, Panama City thing. I don't know that I would like it. I think I'm too much of an introvert. I'd be like, there's too many people here.
Even when I was in college, that would not appeal to me. Had some friends in college whose grandparents were gracious enough to let us use a beach house. A lot of us use a beach house.
Oh, that's fun.
For the week. Yeah, it was fun. Wildest I ever got was, that was the first time I ever went skinny dipping. And that was fun.
I've never been skinny dipping.
It's a very freeing experience. We went at, like, midnight. It was just, like, three of us girls, and we were literally in and out, because it was so
cold.
Stinking cold.
Yeah.
But, like, you know.
See, I don't do well in the cold, so I don't think I would have even made it in the water. I would have, like, stuck my toe in and been like, nope. Absolutely not.
It was fun.
That's good. I'm glad you enjoyed
it. I've skinny dipped in the ocean and in a lake. The lake was more pleasant, but it was also summertime.
Yeah. I can imagine that would be more pleasant.
Yeah.
Well, yeah. So, I have not skinny dipped. If I ever do, I'll let you know what I think.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Make good choices, y'all.
Make good choices, friends. Yeah. Man, so, what's the vibe this week?
A nice dark pint.
Mm-hmm.
Because we are in the depths of December.
Yes.
We are nearing the end of a dark year, and it fits that we have a dark beer and a dark ghost story, but coupled with Muppets.
With Muppets.
because that's what we need to get through this.
So speaking of dark beer, so we're drinking this, like, coffee, it's like a coffee inspired.
It's a stout for sure.
Yeah,
right?
it's a milk porter.
Oh yeah, that's it. That's it. Which I can only drink in wintertime.
Yeah, it's
and
very
like at Christmas.
Yeah,
like it's a dessert.
This kind of wine, not wine. This kind of beer tastes like London to me.
Yeah,
but if the weather's not right for it. And let me tell you why this kind of beer reminds me of London. So, when I was, fresh out of high school, my sister is 11 years older than me. And so, you know, we're close, but you know, there was a time period where, you know, she moved off and stuff and we just didn't get to see each other as much. So when I graduated from high school, she took me on this big trip. We went to, Dublin and we went to London. And this connects to a Muppet Christmas Carol. Well, not specifically the Muppet version, but just a Christmas Carol in general. So we were walking around London. My sister, I don't know if I've told you the story. I think I have, sort of. I've mentioned this before, but my sister found this place called Ye Olde Cheshire Cheese. And it was Charles Dickens' favorite restaurant/pub.
Mm-hmm.
And he would go and sit in the same chair every time he was there. And we went and we ate there. And they had this... They didn't have any beer that was, like, a popular brand. It was all house brew.
Oh. That's how you know it's legit.
It was so good. And I remember telling the guy, because I had just come from Dublin, and I was like, I really liked, like, Guinness and all of the, like, porters and stouts that I had. And he was like, I've got just the thing. He was from New Zealand, by the way, and he was like... drop dead gorgeous. And so little 18-year-old me saw this like blonde New Zealand boy pouring my beer, and he like chatted with me for a few minutes, and I was like, this is it, I'm in love. And I never saw him again, obviously, but so yeah, he gave me a beer, and this beer kind of reminds me of that one. So when I think of like Charles Dickens, This is the drink that comes to mind. Not necessarily because he would have appreciated it, but because during my travels, when I was in a place special to him, this was the kind of beer that I had.
I feel like this is what Dickens drank.
Probably.
Pre-fame,
mm-hmm.
And then post-fame, he was like, only wine.
Maybe I don't
like
know.
Brandy.
I don't know. If he'd been to Ye Olde Cheshire Cheese... You might have, he might have done beer. It felt like an ale kind of place. You know
okay.
what I'm saying? Like a,
okay.
like a good old fashioned ale house.
Mm.
So, but yeah.
Speaking of Dickens and Christmas, we may need to add this to a movie list for future years, but I was curious if you'd seen, did you ever watch, The Man Who Invented Christmas? A biopic about Charles Dickens with Matthew Crawley as Charles Dickens.
I have not.
I think it's really cute. I kind of want to watch it with you now, just since
okay.
since we're English people.
Okay.
But I think it's pretty sweet and enchanting, but I wonder if someone else would find it like overly saccharine for Charles Dickens, and it really wants you to like feel pity for Charles Dickens when he was younger.
I feel like I'll eat that up.
Yeah.
I love a movie that asks me to feel pity for writers. Have you ever seen Bright Star?
Yes, it is not the same vibe as Bright Star.
Okay.
No, it's much more you feel pity for him when he's younger, but then he starts to realize that he's grown into the person he didn't want to be, and his father is played by, I never remember this actor's name, but he's the High Sparrow and the Governor of Port Royal.
Yeah, okay, I couldn't tell you his name either, but I know exactly who you're talking about.
Yeah, he plays his like deadbeat father.
Okay.
I thought it was interesting. And he'll like talk to his characters as he's writing his books.
Okay.
They like appear in his writing room.
That's cool.
Talk to him.
I like
it's
that.
Cute. It's very much like PG family Christmas movie, and
I'm down.
Yeah.
I would watch it. Okay, this is kind of speaking of another Charles Dickens thing. Have you ever watched Doctor Who?
Yes.
Do you remember the episode with the Ninth Doctor?
Yes.
I love that episode.
I like it too.
It's so, honestly, like, 9 and 10 were just spot on.
Absolutely. I'm one of those people where, like, 10 was my favorite.
Mm-hmm.
And I feel a little salty when I get the, like, you only liked him because he was hot. That's a lie. That is not the only reason why I liked him.
Yeah.
But when people tell me that 9 is their favorite, I'm like, that's also correct.
Yes.
Like, I can't fault you for thinking 9's your favorite.
I'm about to get controversial. If you're a Whovian, forgive me. If you tell me 10 is your favorite, it's the safe choice. And you're right to say so.
Mm-hmm.
And you're probably a good person. If you told me 9 is your favorite, I would trust you with my life.
Yeah, you're definitely good noodle.
If you told me 11 is your favorite, we're friends, but I'm gonna watch ya. You know, and I don't know. I quit watching after 11. Well, I watched a little bit of 12.
I also watched a little bit of 12. I haven't checked out the Lady Doctor.
I haven't either. The vibe I get from her is that I would probably like her.
So, I actually saw a really interesting, study thing talking about, like, the shift in writing when Moffat took over with 11. Because I really don't have any problem with either the character or actor of either 11 or 12.
But no. In fact, I think Peter Capaldi and Matt Smith are both excellent actors, and I really like them. All the problems I have with the show are Moffat problems. I think he's a terrible writer and probably a bad person, too.
So, the season with Donna as the companion, who is objectively the best companion, I will fight anyone.
Absolutely
on
best one. Just spot on.
100% of the episodes in her season pass the Bechdel test.
Mm-hmm.
I'm pretty sure less than 50% do in the very next season when Amy comes on.
If you look at, there's like a whole study done on it, and Russell T. Davies, who was the writer for 9 and 10, all of his female characters have a crap ton of agency and have really cool nicknames, like the woman who walked the earth, you know, the bad wolf, you know, stuff like that. And then as soon as Moffat comes on, it's the impossible girl.
Mm-hmm.
Like they always, his women, he doesn't have women, he has girls.
Yeah.
Whereas, like, Russell T. Davies went out of his way to, like, give the female characters a lot of power and agency.
Yeah.
And a lot of the times when, even with Martha and Rose, on the episodes where they don't pass the Bechdel test, it was, like, an unfortunate lack in those episodes of, like, other characters. They were, like, there's a few character episodes where, like, it was, like, a more, like, close-knit experience, or they weren't there for some reason, or, like, they almost always pass the Bechdel test when they're on screen. Donna just had a lot of screen time.
Mm-hmm.
Not that the other companions didn't, but, I think there's just something to be said about, you know, the way, and even the way that they treat, like, the romance, like, I never understood the chemistry between Dr. River Song and... Was she a doctor? She was a doctor, wasn't she?
No. She...
Or a professor or something?
I thought you meant, is she, like, a Time Lord?
No, but she has a doctorate, doesn't she? She's Dr. River Song.
She is... I think so. She's definitely a professor.
Yeah.
She's an archaeologist.
She's something. But, like, the way that the doctor treats her compared to his relationship with Rose Tyler.
Yeah.
Just, I don't know. It just...
I agree.
I miss it. Anyway, so the Christmas specials of Doctor Who are just very special to me. I like to go back and rewatch a lot of the old ones, and but the one with Charles Dickens holds a special place in my heart.
Speaking of Charles Dickens, since
Segway.
I segued us into other movie about Charles Dickens, and then we talked about Doctor Who. But today we are watching a fine Dickensian adaptation.
Yeah. My favorite Dickensian adaptation, if I'm being honest.
Of A Muppet Christmas Carol. This movie came out in 1992, which I had no idea.
I was 2 months old, I bet.
I did not exist.
What month did it come out?
I was in development at this point.
What month did it come out?
December 11th, 1992.
I was almost exactly 2 months old.
Yep.
Yeah.
That is right on the money. It has a 76% on Rotten Tomatoes, only a 64% on Metacritic, which is disappointing.
That is wrong. 100%.
This stars all of the Muppets.
Speaking of Muppets.
It does.
Zoe, what? Zoe's also mad about the Metacritic score.
This is fair. It also features a fantastic performance by the wonderful, wonderful Michael Caine.
Michael Caine.
Yep.
Michael Caine as Scrooge is the definitive Scrooge.
I love this performance.
Fight me on it.
I would... maybe we should save this for afterwards. I'm curious to watch it again. I would say George C. Scott is still my favorite performance of this character.
Okay.
But I want to have this conversation afterward. Because I want to have points to compare it to, so.
Okay, that's fair. That's fair.
Yeah.
And you're right, but I don't like that you're right. We'll talk about it after.
Okay. I actually did not grow up with this movie, funnily enough.
Really?
I didn't see this until college. Yeah. The only Muppet movie I really, really grew up with was Muppet Treasure Island, which is still, in my opinion, the best Muppet movie. But I saw this in college and I thought it was absolutely enchanting, so I'm ready to watch it.
Yeah, so this film, with me and my family, we watch this, every year. Since I've moved out of the house, we don't really watch it together necessarily, mm-hmm. but it's still a tradition that everyone has to watch it. But when I was still living at home, even during college when I'd come home for Christmas, not only would we watch this movie every year, usually on Christmas Eve, but we would sing along with it.
It's a good
out loud. So I'm probably going to sing Forgive Me.
No need okay. need to ask for forgiveness.
Should we give a quick synopsis? I don't know.
It's a Christmas carol, but it's narrated by Gonzo, and I don't know what else to say.
Yeah. Yeah, that's pretty much all you need to know. Ebenezer Scrooge is a bad person, and then three ghosts of Christmas past, present, and future come and tell him to straighten up, and he learns the true meaning of Christmas.
Can I be honest? Honest plug here. If you've only, watched, light versions of A Christmas Carol, it is the shortest book in the world.
It's literally 6 chapters long. And you can read it in one sitting.
I read it every year. Mm-hmm. It is legitimately one of my favorite books.
It's like a 5-hour read.
It makes me cry.
It's so good.
And I think it's less than 5. I think you could probably read it in 3 or 4.
Yeah.
It is a legitimately wonderful, beautiful book. And Scrooge is one of my favorite characters of all time. And it is probably the best written redemption arc in literature.
Yes.
It's legit. There's a reason why it got so popular and why it gets adapted.
Those dumb Star Wars writers who tried to redeem Kylo Ren need to watch this and try again.
I mean, you're not wrong, but leave my son out of this, okay? He acted his little heart out with the terrible rabbit he had, and I believed it. You haven't even seen that movie, so you're not allowed.
I don't need to see that movie.
You're right.
Pass judgment on it.
You're right, you don't. But we'll do that when we get to Star Wars.
Oh, we'll get there. Star Wars is going to be like a 2-month event.
The fact that I'm such a absolute sucker for redemption arcs is probably part of my deep love of Star Wars, but I mean that kind of
Yeah.
I do think that Anakin, like, ranks with other great literary redemption arcs.
Oh, I love Anakin.
But that's a whole other, yeah, whole other ballgame.
We'll talk about that in, like, 2 or 3 months when we, yes, start our Star Wars month.
Yeah, when that happens.
So, without further ado,
now we're gonna get into Muppets. I'm actually really excited. Oh, okay, before we do that, before the last thing I will say before we start this is that Miss Piggy is a personal idol of mine.
Can we talk about the fact that Miss Piggy is the icon of our era?
Yes.
Like, no one else will ever be as iconic as Miss Piggy.
If you told me that I could meet, like, any three celebrities and just those three, I would put Miss Piggy in those three.
Okay, this
I want to sit down and meet her. I have cosplayed her at conventions. I love her so much.
So I've never met Miss Piggy, but I one time at a convention saw a man who was dressed up as Jim Henson, and he had Kermit, and he would, like, I met him, and he sat Kermit on my shoulder and was like, hi-ho, and I legitimately was, like, near tears.
That's so sweet.
He, like, I was so starstruck at a man who had built his own Kermit puppet. So if I ever met Kermit in real life, or Miss Piggy, or any of the Muppets,
yeah,
I would absolutely lose it.
Yep. I love them.
But
they're wonderful.
All right. Oh, one last thing about this movie. I think we're watching it on Disney Plus, and if they don't have my song, I'm going to be mad.
Because they cut a song.
They cut a song out in the theatrical version because test audiences said it was boring. Those test audiences are stupid and wrong. I love it. My dad agrees. He always thought it was kind of boring, but my sister and I would be like, Daddy, no, don't fast forward through the song. Hopefully it's in this one. If it's not, then I'm going to literally pull out the DVD and make you watch that one scene.
I'm fine with that. Yeah.
Okay, cool. So without further ado,
A Muppet Christmas Carol.
A Muppet Christmas Carol. How long was that? We had a lot to say.
I'm so happy.
We told you we would be.
We kept our word.
If you haven't seen the movie, that's a quote from the movie. So I told you, Lizzie, that I can quote this whole movie.
And you did.
I pretty much did. Yeah. And I'm sorry.
I know. Not a problem. Not a problem.
There were times where I was like, don't do it. Don't do it. And then I was like, nah, I gotta do it.
It's a very quotable movie.
It is. It's so quotable.
It's one of those ones that I'm sad I didn't grow up with, because I feel like I would be able to quote it if I'd...
Yeah, it's definitely... I also, on top of watching it every year on Christmas Eve, there was one year where I got, like, really obsessed with it. And you know when you're a little kid and you watch the same movie every day, mm-hmm, for, like, a month?
Yeah,
I had a month of this movie.
Gotcha.
So that helped a lot, too. But it's just so good.
Yeah.
Do we have anything negative to say about it?
No. Anything that would be perceived as a negative would literally just be like, oh, that's an element that I like better in this version.
Yeah.
But to me, that's not really a... negative.
Yeah. And to some extent, because this is a Muppet version,
they can get away with a lot that a lot of other versions can't.
Right. There are some things that it's like comparing apples to oranges. Like, if, yes, we're talking about the George C. Scott version, it's very serious. It's very accurate to the original, yep, text. Whereas this one took some liberties.
But I don't mind any of those liberties.
Yeah, because they're Muppet liberties. You,
exactly,
know, it makes sense. Like,
yeah.
One of my favorite liberties that they took is instead of Fezziwig, it's Fozziwig.
And his rubber chicken factory.
Yeah, Fozziwig and Ma's rubber chicken
no,
factory.
No, it's Fozziwig and Mom.
Mom.
It's not even Mom's, it's Fozziwig and Mom.
Rubber chicken factory. Something that I noticed that I had never noticed before is some of the signs
I pointed like, out the Statler and Waldorf.
Yeah, and then there was one, it was like Ye Olde Grape Tavern.
The Grapes Tavern, yes.
That was pretty funny. But yeah. So let's jump into what we liked about this movie.
Yeah. I mean, what I think even the first time I saw this, I said, even though he's giving, like, very much, like, the performance of Ebenezer Scrooge for an adaptation for children, mm-hmm. so we have to be really mean when we're mean, and we have to be really nice when we're nice, mm-hmm. I still think that Michael Caine gives a 110% performance, and, I mean, like, he... If someone had simply told him, okay, you're gonna give the best Ebenezer Scrooge performance you can, and it had no Muppets in it at all, I don't feel like the performance would be very different. He's wonderful. And he's giving 110%, and he really clearly loves what he's doing.
I mean, how could he not? He's hanging out with the Muppets.
When his eyes are full of light and warmth mm-hmm. and love, it's so comforting.
It is.
And when he's cold and bitter and
he's so scary.
Yeah, and when he cries, I want to cry.
Right?
So I had seen this before, but not with the version with the song that you had mentioned before.
I have one little note. One thing that I dislike about this film. Here's what it is. Actually, it's something I dislike about any audience member out there who said that the song was boring and should be cut. You are wrong. I will fight you. Name a time and a place, and I will fight you. And also, whoever told me that Disney Plus had the song added back in, because there was an article that said it had it added back in.
It wasn't
there, so we had to pause the movie and go watch YouTube.
Yeah.
Now, but now that you have seen it without the song and with the song, what are your feelings on
it? The song adds a lot. Like you said, it gets reprised at the end, so it thematically makes sense.
Mm-hmm.
I have to be honest, when it started, I was like, okay... this is just okay. We haven't really spent time with this Belle character to actually feel this sadness. But then, past Scrooge walks away,
uh-huh.
and present Scrooge walks up behind her and starts singing with her and crying.
Michael Caine starts crying, and my heart breaks every time.
It was so sad.
We both started crying.
Yeah, I would do the same thing that we just did and show the clip to people who I was showing this movie to.
Yeah, I very much feel like this film is incomplete without the song.
Mm-hmm.
I think it adds a lot thematically. I think it has a lot to do with Scrooge's character growth. I think it gives the scene a bigger punch because while it's sad to see Scrooge react when the song's not there, seeing the song and then having him join her in the song, you can see he's reminiscing about truly what he has lost.
Yeah.
And in so doing, it makes the scene more poignant.
Yeah.
And it's just a lot stronger when that occurs.
So we talked about I've at least talked about how I love the George C. Scott version. I think this is, like, an extremely close comparison. And like you said, it's kind of apples and oranges. But that one achieves that through having the scene where he sees where she's at now, that she's married, she has, like, a dozen children,
mm-hmm.
and she pities him in his sad state. Like,
and that movie's longer, too.
Yeah.
So it has a little more, and it's more adult, and that scene makes more sense, I think.
You have a lot more freedom with it.
Yeah.
But this fit with the sadness, mm-hmm. but, I mean, let's be real, that scene takes a dark turn because she suddenly starts, like, you know, remembering him and calls him a poor, wretched man.
Yes.
And it's really, really dark. But this, you still have this sad emotional moment,
mm-hmm.
but, you know, it's in this pretty soft sunset, mm-hmm. they're out in the country on a bridge,
and,
like, it still stays really beautiful.
Yeah.
So, I think it's a very pretty movie. Mm-hmm. We were gushing about costumes, and whoever got to pick out all these Victorian fabrics.
The set's great!
The set is wonderful.
The costumes are great!
You know, this whole thing is filmed on an itty-bitty soundstage, and I don't care. I think all the Muppets that they cast are wonderful. Yeah, it's just, it's very sweet and heartfelt, and I liked it a lot. We talked a lot when we were watching this about the Ghost of Christmas Present.
Mm-hmm.
I really like the Ghost of Christmas Present in this. I still prefer the 84 mm-hmm. one, just because when he needs to be scary and, like, critical, oh my gosh, mm-hmm. you feel, when he turns and repeats his words back to him.
The degree to which he hates Scrooge in that version.
It's so good.
And the juxtaposition for how kind he is to everyone else.
He's so jolly.
But Scrooge.
Yeah.
Works really well.
In this one, he's, you know, he's jolly and forgetful. Mm-hmm. He forgets things because he's focused in the present. Mm-hmm. Like, I get it. And again, for
I
this...
I like it, and it works for a children's film. But he definitely is too kind to Scrooge.
Yeah.
Scrooge doesn't deserve it.
It fits with the tone of this movie, so I'm okay mm-hmm. with it.
His song slaps.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah,
it's the best. It's
good.
So good.
Yeah, those are probably my standouts.
I do want to take a second and talk about Mr. Paul Williams and Mr. Miles Goodman. They composed the music for this movie.
Mm-hmm.
God bless you, sirs.
Everyone.
It was so good, and I'm so thankful for this soundtrack. Why don't we take a second and just talk briefly about... Let's break the movie up into spirits.
Yeah.
So I guess let's start with the opening and Marley. Kind of, what are our takeaways about the opening?
I actually think that the opening is probably one of the strongest parts of the movie.
It's so good.
I actually think my favorite song is his introduction
song.
Oh,
absolutely. It's so good.
It's so well shot. He's
it is.
So terrifying and imposing.
Everything is on the beat.
Yeah.
It's tight. There is no dead air in this entire movie.
No.
It keeps moving.
Yep.
Gonzo.
I was gonna say, I like Gonzo Dickens and
yeah.
Rizzo the Rat as himself.
As himself, yes. I love it. It's so good. I identify way too much with Rizzo the Rat. Like,
yeah.
I am here to tell the story. And I am here for the food. Like, I'm like, that's
you,
me.
You have this intense love of, like, small... like, kind of ugly, cute creatures. Like, you are very goblin core.
Yeah.
And I feel like Rizzo the Rat fits with that
aesthetic
really
yeah,
well.
Yeah, I think so, too. I think I see myself in the goblin-y kind of characters
mm-hmm.
the most. Because they're small and a mess. And I'm like, oh, look, it's me! So, yeah, I really love Rizzo. I love the decision to have two Marleys.
Just so that they can be Statler and Waldorf.
Well, it works so
well. It's brilliant. It works really well. And it's a great way to incorporate them then in the past when they're at Fozziwig's. Mm-hmm. Yeah, it just... I said this in the beginning. All the casting in this. Every
perfect.
Muppet they picked for every part.
Yeah.
Is so perfect. And I love that this is a trend now to take, like, a great work of literature on TikTok and cast your
uh-huh.
Muppet cast. So, okay, tell me when you... If you're okay with a little side train here.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
What is a great work of literature?
Ooh.
Not a pre-existing musical, so we can't say Les Mis or
okay.
Phantom. But what is a great work of literature that you would love to see the Muppets adapt? Yeah.
I mean, one of my favorite books, if we're keeping with a Dickens kind of trend,
mm-hmm.
it might be a little too dark for Muppets, but, I do love A Tale of Two Cities.
Okay. Okay.
Might be a little too dark with the guillotine and everything.
Yeah, you could probably get away with, like, a David Copperfield a little more easily.
Yeah, probably. I'm trying to think, on one hand, like, I don't know how I'd feel about them doing Austin, but on the other hand, it would be really fun if they did Austin.
So here for it.
Like, especially if they did something like, you know, there's lots of versions of Pride and Prejudice. There's really only one of Sense and Sensibility.
Ooh, okay.
That might be kind of fun.
Okay. I think if you do Pride and Prejudice, you have the name recognition.
Yeah.
And then I think you keep, like, Lizzie and Darcy as humans.
Mm-hmm.
And then you can cast various other people around them as Muppets.
Yeah.
But, I would 100% be here for it. I want Is it bad that I want Kermit to be Bingley so bad?
Not at all. Mr. Darcy and I think Elizabeth should be human.
They're humans, yeah.
And then I think Bingley should be Kermit.
And then that makes Janice Piggy. Does that work?
I feel like that's the choice you have to go with, but I also feel like Miss Piggy would be a good Mrs. Bennet.
Yeah, okay, can I be honest? I would so be here for a Kermit Mr. Bennet, because he could have all these really sincere...
Oh, that'd be so good!
These really sincere scenes with Lizzie, but then he's also... He loves his wife, but he's exasperated by her at times.
Lydia and Kitty could be Belinda and Bettina. That'd be so good.
That would be really cute.
Okay, who's
cute.
Mr. Collins?
Ooh.
Beaker! Yes! Yes!
It's just Beaker. It could be Honeydew, but...
But imagine it's just him, but every time he says Lady Catherine de Bourgh, he's like, me, 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 me! Oh, okay, now who's Lady Catherine de Bourgh?
Ooh.
She might be human, too.
She might be, especially if you got, like, a really, like, dignified actress in there. You get, you know...
Like a Judi Dench.
Well, yeah, she's already...
She's done it before.
She's done it before.
Who cares? She can do it again.
You get, who's the other dame?
Maggie Smith?
Yeah, thank you. I could not think of Maggie Smith's name. She wouldn't be bad.
Yeah.
You get another... Okay. You get another powerhouse lady in there.
Give it a couple years. Like, she's arguably a little too young for Lady Catherine right now, but I feel like one day Olivia Colman should play Lady Catherine de Bourgh.
Yeah. I'd be here for that.
Yeah. Like, they could maybe even age her up a little bit.
So, that was tons of fun.
That was
fun. And I'm going to go home and write out my dream cast, and then we should compare them one week. Our Muppet dream cast.
I'm, like, thinking of other books now. Like, I don't know, like, Moby Dick, but Muppets.
So, funnily enough, I was actually thinking of The Odyssey, but Muppets.
Oh my god!
Like... Everyone's familiar with it to some degree. It's an adventure episodic story. Now, granted, I feel like you couldn't have Odysseus' whole crew get killed, but I feel like that's an adaptation change you can make if you did Muppets The Odyssey.
I just had... Okay, hold on. Side note, most of his crew should be the rats.
Yeah! And okay. Rizzo as Yuri Locus.
this is a terrible idea. Terrible idea.
Do tell.
Hamlet. Nothing changes about the script.
But it's...
Beaker is Hamlet. Me, me, me! Me, 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 me!
Me! Me, 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 me. Me, 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 me. Gosh, now this is gonna be a YouTube video.
Oh my god.
Make
okay.
this please. Great soliloquies by Beaker.
Oh, it's so good.
If they were to Shakespeareify it, it would have to, if they did Shakespeare, it would have to be a comedy. But like, I don't know. I don't know what you'd. A mid Muppet Night's Dream.
Yeah, that might work.
Maybe.
Twelfth Night might be a good one.
Maybe. That might work.
It could work.
I'm having way too much fun with this train of
thought. This is really good. Back to Muppet Christmas Carol.
Christmas. This is a Christmassy movie.
It is. It's really good. Okay, let's talk about real quick. Young Scrooge has no business
His
being as attractive
face
as he is.
His face is so pretty.
He's just genuinely one of the most handsome men I've ever seen in my life.
Okay, we also talked about, like, again, when we were talking about costuming, the coats in this movie. The coat game is so strong.
Victorian,
on humans and Muppets.
Victorian men's fashion is exactly what men's fashion should be.
Yep.
Edwardian, too.
It
kind of blends.
Bring all
Women's
that back.
Changes a lot more.
Give me some capes.
Mm-hmm.
I love me a man in a cape.
A cane, a cape, and a top hat.
That's why when he steps onto the screen. Okay, so Take note, Mr. Hooper. This movie opens with a great use of a Dutch angle low shot because Scrooge is this imposing, strange figure. Yes.
So the world feels off kilter because when he comes in, it literally changes the atmosphere because he is so cold.
Plus, all these Muppets are tiny, so they're always looking up to him.
And it makes sense. Literally all of the shots in this film, the cinematography is just good.
It, like, everyone's so warmly lit. Like, I feel like there's a cozy fire everywhere.
Yeah. And the only moments it's not is usually when you're looking at Scrooge.
Yep.
Until, of course, the end. And so, like, the lighting is so intense.
He gets his cute little red scarf and it's Christmas.
Beaker gives it to him. I love the changes. I love that he hangs out with Bob Cratchit at the end instead of going over to Fred's house for the day.
Yeah. So we talked about this too. Funnily enough, in the 84, one of my favorite scenes is when he goes over to Fred's house at the end of everything.
And that going to Bob Cratchit's house would not work in any other version.
No, it wouldn't work in any other version.
But it makes sense for this version.
In this one, it's just so happy. Mm-hmm. It's so lovely. You get to see, you have to see Miss Piggy react to him getting a salary raise. Plus, you get the lovely vindication of her being ready to just lay one on, like, just
And therefore,
punch
Bob
him.
Cratchit, I am going to raise your salary. And therefore, I'm going to raise you right off the pavement.
And pardon?
I love that.
I've said before, I love Miss Piggy. This is no exception. She gets the single sassiest role in anything. And I love that they made her. I honestly feel like, you know, Kermit is the right choice for Bob Cratchit.
Yeah.
But gosh darn it, Miss Piggy is the best choice for Mrs. Cratchit.
Can we talk about the scene where he comes in and she goes, Merry Christmas, Cratchy! And then there's a squeak and it's very clear to an adult audience that she has just squeezed his butt cheek.
And I never noticed
it. I never got it as a kid, and now as an adult I'm like, what? It's a squeaker in it.
Oh my gosh.
Okay, so I think it's obvious that this is in our treasure pile.
Yes, absolutely.
So the question now, I think, because this is going to start a Muppet month for us, right?
Yes, unless we watch other Christmas movies together.
Right.
I think January needs to be...
Muppet month. So I think maybe what we should do... is as we go through, let's rank our Muppet movies.
Okay. I'm game. I'm game for this.
Yeah.
Are you picking the first one or am I?
I'm a little confused about whose week it is.
This was, I don't know.
This
I guess
kind of a joint film.
I guess so.
The last one we watched that was not a joint film was
mine.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So I guess I'll go first.
Okay.
So that means the next movie we watch is probably going to be The Dark Crystal.
Yay! She said...
That or Labyrinth. I am open either.
I've seen Labyrinth. I've seen Labyrinth twice,
But have you sat through my feminist lecture of Labyrinth?
Have I listened to your dissertation on Labyrinth?
It derails to me going, oh, don't mind me, I'm just a whim.
I actually think this is going to make Labyrinth much more enjoyable for me than it was the past two times I've seen it.
I feel like we should definitely start with Dark Crystal so you have something to look forward to.
So, the reason why I had that reaction is just the bits I've seen of Dark Crystal, just pictures of it.
Mm-hmm.
It looks so terrifying.
It's... Yes.
I'm so afraid. We're about to have another last unicorn, and I just know it.
It's the only Muppet movie I think I've ever seen that has no people in it. There's no humans in the entire film.
Okay.
So, you might hate me for it, but if I can get you into it, and we'll talk about this more next week, but I'm going to also try to eventually convince you to watch the Dark Crystal series on Netflix because it is actually good. Like, objectively, I recognize that the movie The Last Crystal is a very flawed film. The TV show is actually good.
Okay.
And I'll tell you more. I'll explain why next week.
But, sounds good.
It's really good.
Okay.
So, yeah.
Cool.
So, I think I would put this as my number two Muppet movie of the ones we're going to watch of all time.
I think I'd probably put it there as well. At least in the Muppet movies that I've seen.
Mm-hmm. What's your number one?
A Muppet
Treasure Island. Yeah, that's probably my number one.
That's probably what we need to finish on. So
I agree. I think I quote this one maybe more, but Tim Curry's performance. I know exactly what you're doing.
He laughs and then he just stops. And he has the crazy eyes every single time.
I cannot put into words. Like, Michael Caine is one of my favorite Scrooges.
Uh-huh.
There is no version of Long John Silver that is better than Tim Curry's.
No.
He is the definitive Long John Silver. Yep. And I've seen a couple versions, and I'm always like,
you're not pass, Tim Curry.
Pass. I want Tim Curry or nothing at all. So, but this one's number two on the Muppet ranking.
Yeah.
I have a feeling I know what the final order is going to be for you.
Of the ones that we watch, yeah, you probably do. Yeah.
Dark Crystal is going to be low on the totem pole.
Probably. I'm willing and ready to be pleasantly surprised, but...
It's something.
Woo.
It's something.
It will be dark.
And there'll be crystals.
There'll be lots of crystals, because it came out in the 80s. Right?
Yes.
And there were crystals everywhere.
This film is, like, very clearly trying to be Muppet Star Wars.
You know, I've heard that from people. I've gotten that sense from people. Mm-hmm. I see this all the time on list of, like, great standalone fantasy films.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm very underwatched in standalone fantasy mm-hmm. films, to be perfectly honest.
Yeah.
You
might like it. I doubt it. But
I'm open to the possibility of it.
Yeah. So, yeah. Cool. Next week, Dark Crystal.
Yep. I'm here for it. I have like my list of other Christmas movies that, like, if we get the chance to watch together, I'm excited to watch with you, and like maybe we'll like chit-chat about those at some point. Maybe we'll save them and do them as a partner thing for next Christmas. Mm-hmm. But I've enjoyed watching Christmas movies with
you. I have too.
Yeah.
I have too, for sure.
So,
yeah.
A very Merry Christmas to everyone. Yeah.
Merry Christmas. Happy holidays.
We're gonna... Is
it still Hanukkah?
Ooh, I don't know.
I should know, but I don't. If it is, happy Hanukkah. If not, I hope your Hanukkah was great. I don't know when Kwanzaa is.
It's after Christmas.
It's after Christmas, yes. So looking forward to that if you celebrate Kwanzaa. But yeah, everybody have a Merry Christmas, Happy Holidays.
Wonderful holiday.
Yeah. Be safe.
Yes.
Make good choices.
Enjoy time with family, whether it is in person or virtual.
And lots of food.
Yeah. And watch something that makes you happy.
Yeah. And if you need a recommendation... Muppet Christmas Carol.
Muppet Christmas Carol.
Or Christmas Prince. Not Christmas Prince.
The Princess Switch.
Whatever.
To be honest, a lot of people would also recommend A Christmas Prince.
Oh, by the way, as a quick side note, we never talked about this.
Bonus story.
We watched the sequel immediately after we finished recording for The Princess Switch. Because that movie rocked me. It was so good.
I can't tell you again how happy I am that you really liked The Princess Switch.
I haven't cried that hard in a while. It messed me up, but in a good way.
It was amazing.
It was great. So we were like, let's watch the sequel right now.
Underwhelming.
Don't watch the sequel.
Yes. Yeah.
It's not good.
You know what I realized?
Hmm.
There's not enough magical maybe Santa Man in it.
Yeah, he's only there once.
And the first one was charmingly low budget, mm-hmm. and like, you know, it looked like a Hallmark movie. This one they're trying to make look like a movie.
And it didn't work.
Doesn't deserve
it. Also, I kind of had an issue. So the first one, Kevin and, why am I blanking on her name?
Oh.
Stacy and.
Oh no.
The other one.
The Duchess. The Duchess of.
Moldavia?
Is it
Malgravia?
Belgravia.
No, isn't that the country?
No, you're right. They're in the country of Belgravia. Oh, no. She's the Duchess of...
Montanaro.
Oh my gosh, I'm so ashamed of myself. Right.
So, it kind of felt like the Prince and Stacy's romance was a little more central to the first one.
Yes.
And even though Kevin and whatever her name was were... important, they weren't the primary focus.
Yeah.
So I was promised that theirs would be the primary focus in this one.
Mm-hmm.
But honestly, it didn't really feel like it.
No.
It felt like Kevin was off pining for most of the movie because she didn't want to be with him anymore.
Yeah.
And there was stuff going on around Kevin, and I thought I was going to get a movie chock full of Kevin. And I'm really upset about it.
We were pleased with the amount of the prints that we got in the first movie.
Yeah.
But, the world needs more Kevin.
Let's start a campaign for
Netflix.
Dear Netflix, all I want for Christmas is Kevin.
No more lookalikes. Here's what we want.
Here are our list of demands.
Here's what we want from the Princess Switch 3, the baby switch. They have to switch babies.
You know it's coming.
Wait, but they won't be able to do that. There's no way those babies are going to look alike.
No.
I didn't think this through.
If they did that. If they were stupid.
Oh no. My third part of the movie series plan is ruined. Oh, that's incredible.
Also, I was a little upset. Side note, I was a little upset that the prince didn't realize that his wife had switched. Like, he knows this is the thing she does.
So, by the way, the plot of the sequel is that Kevin and the Duchess broke up because she has to go now become queen of Montanaro because of some weird abdication law. And then... they're trying the whole time to get them back together. And so Stacy, the baker turned princess, is now like, let's switch places again so that you have time to go be with Kevin and rekindle your feelings. And
which we got like one scene of them rekindling their feelings. Stupid.
They went to a little like bachelor style date that had been set up for them in a Christmas village, whatever.
Lame.
I wanted
30 minutes of Kevin and her frolicking in the snow, drinking hot chocolate.
The prince, she should have sat down across from the prince and he'd be like, are you feeling all right? And she's like, oh, yes, I'm fine. I'm the Duchess. And him go, no, Stacy, really, what's going on?
Right?
Like, that's all I needed. I needed him to be like, the Duchess.
Even if he spent the rest of the movie, like, sleuthing... Yep. Like, he's not sure, but is suspicious.
Yeah. Why is my wife acting weird?
But the fact that he's just, like, she's, like, ignoring me all of a sudden. I don't know where she's gone. And I don't really... Am I being overbearing? Am I being annoying?
That's the lesson.
I'm like, babe, no! You're perfect!
Yep.
You sweet, sweet summer
you
child.
Just want a little bit of attention, and that's okay.
That's normal. Not a fan of the fact that he didn't know it was her... because I think he, in the first movie, was a smarter character than that.
Yeah.
Not a fan of the fact that Kevin, even though it was kind of his movie, still felt sidelined. Not a fan that there's suddenly a random third character who's cousin.
I was so excited for this third lookalike, and
she
was
annoying,
so
and her accent wasn't good, and...
Yeah.
I...
long story short, don't watch the sequel. Absolutely watch the first one.
Watch it, refill your cup of hot chocolate, and then rewatch it, and thank us later.
Yep.
So yeah, there's a Christmas movie you should watch.
Yep.
And on that note...
Finally.
Merry Christmas.
Very Merry Christmas and Happy New Year.
Happy New Year.
Happy New Year.
And God bless us, everyone. Thanks for hopping in the trash can with us.
Give this week's movie a watch and tell us what you think.
And let us know what movies you think are trashy treasure.
Maybe we'll give it a watch.
Follow us on Twitter at Liv and Lizzie to tell us your thoughts.
And remember, no matter how trashy you feel, you are deeply treasured.
Bye!